Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Who here is excited for the Play to Win podcast? Yeah, live? Well, I know I'm super excited. Make sure you put any of your questions here in the box and make a ton of noise because I am super thrilled to bring to the stage Cam, Dylan, and Tyler for their Play to Win podcast live.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Oh, how are we?
Oh, my chair's over here. I missed it.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate this last minute swap. Appreciate you all being here. This is fun. Thanks for coming. How's everyone's con going?
Good.
All right. That sounds pretty good so far.
Normally, I start with the Dragon Shield bit. Should I? We ready?
Yeah, because we're gonna post this later, so we might as well get that done now.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Normally, I would say there's a link down below, but now there's a store down below, so after this, I'll everyone go head out downstairs and check the Dragon Shield booth out.
It's the same thing, but you're going to say the whole URL, though?
The URL, yeah. www.dragonshield.com.
Yeah, really.
Good job. Yeah, thank you very much.
All right. So we got a lot of good stuff to talk about.
You got to say welcome to the thing.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh my God. Messing this whole thing up already.
It's different. It's all
yeah,
hungry.
Really. Yeah. Well, welcome to the Play to Win podcast where we talk about winning in CEDH. All right. I'm Cam.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Dylan. This week we are talking about everything that was revealed this week at MagicCon Atlanta. I feel like that's like the most, what's on everyone's mind right now. So that's what we're going to talk about. There was a bunch of secret layers. There was a couple new sets announced. We're going to talk about what cards might see a little bit of play in CDH and what cards we are excited about overall.
Yeah, basically our preview access to what we are most excited about for 2026.
Yes.
And we got a bunch of questions that you all have left here too. So once I'm done talking about a card, I'll go up and like get a question or something.
It'll be good.
And guys, it was a lot. They spoiled so much cool stuff this weekend, right? Like, who was here on Friday and just went like, what, all at once?
Yes.
It was incredible.
It was crazy, yeah. So do you want to start off with some Secret Lair stuff, or do you want to start off with like the sets that we're going into next year?
Let's ask the crowd, can we?
Yeah, sure.
Anyone who's looking to want to talk about Secret Lairs, make some noise.
All right.
How about the new sets?
Okay. All right. That sounds good.
That's coming out.
All right. Yeah. We'll start with there. Okay. So let me get this here. We'll open link. This is great. The best part about the live podcast is you get to see me flub and flounder through everything.
I'm so sorry. I threw a curveball at you right away. I'm looking at Dwight Schrute. So obviously we're supposed to talk about that one first. And last minute.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah. So we got a lot of new sets coming next year. We got seven total sets.
Yeah.
For 2026. Which is just like Griselbrand, right? It's eight mana for a seven seven. 2026 has seven sets.
Yes. It should have been 26 sets. What were they thinking?
Yeah. So
yeah, really.
And much like Griselbrand, you pay $7,000 and then you have a collector's case of every single set.
Yeah. So the first one that we're going to next year is Lorwyn Eclipsed.
This is
a long awaiting return to a super beloved set. And we got a couple of spoilers for this one already. Previews they are now.
Yeah.
The one that I am mostly excited about. Ooh, I want to pull up here.
While you pull it up, I'm excited about the Shocklands, the flip Shocklands.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Cool.
I thought the art was awesome. I'm definitely going to try to use those. Although I do love the original Ravnica Shocks, but these are going to be a nice.
These are going to be really cool. Yeah. The art for both the Eventide side and the Shadowmoor. That's the name of the plane.
Eventide. What is it?
It's Shadowmoor and Lorwyn.
Lorwyn's the greater plane, and then Shadowtide and Even. I really don't.
Shadowtide and Even More.
Yeah, I feel like I'm saying
that's
a lot of
first chain food sliver situation we're getting ourselves into again.
I'm going to stop talking like I know what it is, and there's good and bad. There's good and bad, I think.
All right, yeah. I want to talk about a card. This is Bitterbloom Bearer.
Yeah.
Have we seen this card yet? Who knows this card? Right? It's freaking sweet. So this is black for a 1/1 fairy rogue with flash and flying. And at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose a life and create a 1/1 blue and black fairy creature token with flying.
Yeah. Bitter Blossom on a stick.
That is so cool. Bitter Blossom on a flash stick.
I feel
like that matters a lot because flashing that in the end step when you're trying to create little guys for Timna plans or something like that is like way more appealing than having to just like let it sit out there, get bowmastered, whatever else. It gives you something to do. I think this is like definitely just better than Bitter Blossom. Right?
Yes, definitely better than Bitter Blossom. It's got to be.
It feels instant. Since it has flash. Yeah, flash. Like it feels like you're going to instantly get
Cameron,
the value.
That's what flash is. Yeah. They know that already.
No, but I know. But like that's what makes Bitter Blossom bad. Is now this is like, it's like, I can't even fathom how much better this is than Bitter Blossom.
Does this see any CDH play though? Like I think about Dargo a little bit. Dargo wants little bodies. Maybe Marnius wants little bodies. Does Marnius want something like this?
They sure are a token every turn. Right? I mean, it's no Smothering Tithe, obviously. Like it's not the top end of Marnius stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like being able to consistently like make a little guy, like maybe it sees play in Marnius. I haven't played enough Marnius to really know where the limit is. But
here's
the
thing is that War and Soul Trader exists. This is basically if you have this and Marnius and Warren Soul Trader, that's two cards that ends up making you some mana then, like every single turn.
Yeah.
So it's just like another piece that I think you could add that's not necessarily like the greatest engine on its own in Marnius, but like in conjunction. It's like having a Fairy Mastermind in your deck, right? Yeah. It's a terrible card advantage engine because everyone's drawing way more cards than you at all times.
But
at least like you can keep it with other pieces of card advantage and it helps you just snowball a little bit better.
Would you consider it in Timna Dargo because it makes a flying creature for Timna and you can sacrifice a body to Dargo?
I would. A lot of bodies to sacrifice plus having a flying attacker for Timna. It definitely is very close. Most of the creatures that I'm like really interested in for Timna Dargo are at one mana.
Yeah.
But the flash matters a lot too.
I think
I will at least be like testing this.
It's going to feel a little bit obviously not like Orcish Bowmaster, but the fact that it's like an instant speed multiple bodies creature, I feel like sometimes, because a lot of times I feel like what Bowmaster, at least from a Rog'Sai player's perspective, it gives me two bodies that I can sacrifice, one to Diabolic Intent and one to Calling the Weak or something. And when I can do that, that's great. So like if you can utilize like all aspects of the card, I feel like it could be good. But it doesn't actually draw you any cards and it doesn't actually make you any mana. You have to use it with something else to make those things. So I'm not positive, but maybe.
That's kind of where I'm at with it, too.
Yeah.
It just harkens back to a card that I loved to play when Bitter Blossom was
good. Bitter Blossom is a cool card.
And I feel like anytime we get like an upgrade to a super powerful card like that, I feel like there's more of a reason to want to talk about it.
I love seeing the same design space come back in like playable modern iterations. It's really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Should we talk about another card? Are there any more from this set that we could?
You know, that's the one I'm most excited about. We did see like a couple of other commanders from this set that were shown. I like how I just call them commanders. They're legendary creatures, but like they're just commanders in my brain
now. Designed to be commanders, right? A lot of them look like that. Maybe that's just because we're commander players, so we see that, but
that could be. Yeah, that could be.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they're designing with commander in mind at this point.
Yeah, they've kind of leaned into that very publicly. These are commander cards.
Yeah, really. So I'm excited to see what else comes back. Like we're getting a lot of characters that are returning. Like we got a new Ashling, we got a new Sig, who I don't necessarily think are like super CEDH push.
Can we quickly talk about them? Because I don't remember them and I'm curious.
Yeah. So the Ashling Rekindled is one in a red for a legendary elemental sorcerer that when it enters or transforms into this Ashling, you discard a card and then draw a card. And at the beginning of your first main phase, you can pay a blue to transform Ashling into Ashling Rhyme Bound. I don't know what that means, but it's a legendary elemental wizard that's a 1/3 now that says whenever this creature transforms into Ashling Rhymebound at the beginning of your first main phase, add 2 mana of any one color, and you spend this mana only to cast spells with mana value 4 or greater. And then at the beginning of your first main phase, you can pay red. Did you get that?
That was
and then
so
you
many words.
It's so many words, right? Yeah. It harkens back to reading those plane chases the other day.
Yeah. Rhymebound has got to mean this creature is bound to Rhymebound. rhyming. They can only speak in rhyme.
No,
they
spit R-I-M. Oh my God.
Spit fat bars all the time.
R-I-M-E.
That's what.
It's not. It's frost. It's
Yeah, I thought it was R-H-Y-M-E, but it's R-I-M-E, which is way more confusing.
You had until the four or greater part on the card. I felt like it was almost something until that four or greater part.
Like it's cheap. Yeah. It's cheap, but I don't think that it's going to be stronger than Raul Zarek or Vivi.
Oh, yeah.
At least right
and
now.
Raul's been doing so much recently.
I've honestly been thinking of changing Vivi into Raul just to see what this hype is about.
Oh, you're finally sick of winning. That's great.
No, if you saw yesterday, I'm sick of losing to Vivi. Vivi's getting bounced all the time. You put a curiosity on the stack, and nobody wants you to have fun.
It's the biggest red alarm, too. I feel like Raul, like, I don't know why, it almost like gets to go a little bit under the radar because it's not exactly mana at first, and like there's not exactly a perfect point to interact with Raul. Like, none of the spells really matter. It's like a storm deck. They're just trying to gain value, so it feels like it's difficult for players to know when the right time is to interact. Maybe I just don't know when the time is, but to me it feels like Vivi, it's obvious. Curiosity on the stack, do something.
Do something now.
Right,
yeah.
With Raul, it's like I don't really know when the right time to do something.
Is this when they're about to storm off? I don't know.
Right, and then all of a sudden it's like too late. Raul's flipping in, there is copying 8 spells or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been excited a lot for Raul recently. I feel like when I look at blue red shells, that's the one that I'm thinking about.
So
yeah.
Not switching to Ashling.
I don't think I will be switching Ashling as the main commander. I think Raul still, Raul or Vivi. I mean, obviously Vivi's good, but Raul or Vivi.
But it is cool. Sig is the other one that flips, right?
Sig's the other one that flips, yeah. Now this is one in a blue on the front side from legendary Merfolk Wizard who can't be blocked, and when it enters or transforms into this version of Sig, which is Wanderine Wisdom, Wander Wine Wisdom.
Is a wine drinker.
Wander. I've never had Wander Wine before. Is it like Wander Bread?
It's like Wander Bread, yeah.
Oh, no.
So whenever it does those things, target creature gains when this creature deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, draw a card until end of turn. And then this time, you can pay white at the beginning of your first main phase to transform it into Sig Wander Brine Shield, which is this is a pickled version of Sig. It's now a 2/2 who still can't be blocked. And whenever this creature transforms into this pickled version, target creature you control gains protection from each color until your next turn.
Okay, so a block.
And then you can transform them for a blue mana at the same time.
Okay, so I'm going to be honest with you. I had a hard time understanding all those words that you said, but I heard you say draw a card at some point. Is this something?
This reminds me of the Katara that we talked about a little bit ago, the experience counter Katara.
It doesn't do the experience counters, which are really hard to interact with. This can just be removed, but it does say draw a card on it. However, I feel like it's kind of in territory where it's competing with Thymna, and like, good luck. Like,
yeah.
It's a cheap blue-white commander, which we don't really have.
Be blocked is huge. Can't be blocked. This one can't be blocked. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That's good. No, so that means that like you can always target it with its ability, and that way you're guaranteed to get a second card.
That's kind of nice. If you want to be an Azorius little creature's card advantage, this could be something. Only 2 mana. Maybe it is good.
Feels like it might work in like a Glenn deck, too. Do
whenever
you Glenn from
transforms.
I just want to remind you of how you guys first felt when you read the 2 mana Wrath. Do you remember this? The one where if you tap creatures when you cast a spell, you can draw a card. And that also felt like it could be an Azorius little creature's deck, and it had the draw a card text on it, and then you actually go to play it, and you're like, it's just not there. It's
Wrath had an
there.
Infinite mana Wrath outlet,
infinite
too,
mana,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there was like a way you could pump your whole team infinitely if you had the mana for it.
I do think this is close, though. Like, I feel like if you love Sig, is that who this character is?
This is Sig,
like, if you love Sig and you love this strategy, I feel like this deck could win 20 to 25% of your games if you really put a ton of energy into it and like learn the deck.
If you love Sig, is this a better Sig than the Dimir Sig?
Nope.
Do you remember the Dimir Sig? Let's look up the Dimir Sig.
The Dimir Sig is
nobody
the beginning
played
of
this since Flash was unbanned.
Every once in a while, I see a Sisay pilot play Dimir Sig because it's a legendary creature that has draw a card on it, and I think that's kind of nice.
Well, then Mana Crypt got banned, and then it made it even worse. The Dimir Sig was the Dimir hybrid mana 1/3 at the beginning of each end step. If an opponent lost 3 or more life this turn, you draw a card. It's like a cheap Ishtola.
Yeah, it's kind of a Ishtola.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The reason why you would want to play the blue-white one is maybe because you like blue-white and sick at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, that would be why, yeah.
I don't know. It's okay. It's close.
Who am I to question? Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty much everything from Lorwyn that I'm mostly excited about for right now.
Can we also talk about the five-minute Orzhov one?
Oh, you want to talk about
It's just got really interesting text.
Oh, okay.
This is Eridu, the Carrier of Dawn, who's a legendary elemental god.
That's cool.
That's dope, right? It's 3 and 2 white for a 5/5 flying lifelinker that says creature spells you cast have Convoke. And at the beginning of your first main phase, oh, look at this line of text. Yeah, you can pay black, and if you do, transform Eridu into, oh, this one has a different name now, Isilu. Carrier of Twilight, all the books and its arms.
Thing.
It just carries them. Yeah. It's a high schooler from 2011. This is another elemental god with flying and lifelink and says other non-token creatures you control have persist and can be retransformed for white mana at the beginning of your first main phase.
Non-token creatures have persist. That's got to be good.
Yeah. So these are two sides that have great text. I think the mana cost is going to be prohibitive for CEDH.
Yeah.
But in the same way that Rabadrabic is like doing really cool stuff in Orzhov with bringing things back from the graveyard, this is giving you an option that like does persist on one side. So it's kind of helping you with the mana resource. And then it seems like it has another side where you're more likely to be able to really dive into combos that can just win you the game.
Yeah.
So I think this might be like surprisingly close for an Orzhov commander. I'm just very curious about it.
I have a few questions. There's got to be a way to combo all your non-token creatures have persist. You have to be able to go that infinite with that pretty easily, right? There has to be a line or something.
Yeah. The Vizier of Remedies is one in a white that says that creatures you control or something can't get plus one counters.
It's kind of like the Malira-ish combos. There has to be something with like the lesser Manticore or something. I don't know why I can't pinpoint what the combo would be
And also remember that things with Undying re-enter with a +1/+1 counter.
Yeah.
So usually like those stack outlet, if they all have persist and Undying, I think they can do both. Right?
Oh, if something already has Undying, it has Undying and persist and it'll come back forever?
Yeah.
That's okay. That's
Undying
good.
Plus persist equals immortality forever.
Oh, we finally
solved it.
We solved it. Okay, yeah, that could be cool. And then the first side, so it was mana reduction on the front side and then combo on the back side.
Yeah.
5 mana for the front and then only one to flip it?
Only one to flip it, but you have to wait until the next turn.
Oh, you can't do it right away.
Because the trigger happens at the beginning of your first main phase. You can pay the additional mana. So Isilu kind of feels like a 6-mana commander for that reason, that you have to like spread the cost between. It's kind of nice that at least the front side allows you to cheat on mana for your Vizier of Remedies or whatever your Undying and now Persisty creature is going to be. So that way on your next turn, you can have that extra mana up to transform your commander, and then that way, like, you don't have to worry about that.
Here's what I'm thinking. Can I tell you what I'm thinking right now? When
no,
I play my 5-mana
commander.
No, all right. Here's what I'm thinking. You play your 5-mana commander, and then you want to use the Convoked aspect of it right away, which means you probably want to play one of your combo pieces, one of your Undying creatures right away. So I have to tap out for 5 mana. I have to play my commander that is a combo piece later, not right now, and then also play the second piece of the combo piece now, not later, because later I have to activate to flip it on the main phase, which means I can't Convoke next turn. So like I have to put out both of my stuff and then pass the turn. And everyone sees both of my stuff out for a whole turn cycle before I get to go to my turn.
And you're in a black-white deck, which means that you can't stop interaction hitting you?
Yes.
I was like, hang on. Like, what, do you want them to also have like perfect hidden information?
Well, I guess theoretically I would like to be able to transform. Like, I want to get the Convoke aspect at the like later on when I'm ready to combo. You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like it puts you in a situation where like you're just going to be the target and not going to be able to back it up in time.
Yeah, the hard part of the deck is going to be the timing of the transformation.
Right. Yeah.
Because you are going to have those times where you're like, oh man, I wish I didn't have to choose when this would go.
Right. And you could always, of course, just like not Convoke the thing out and just pretend it doesn't really have that Convoke text. I'm going to bring out my combo piece later on and not let the table know that I have it. And then just like not use the Convoke aspect
of it. I mean, your commander's 5 mana. So theoretically, as long as you didn't like mana vault it out really quick, like you're going to have the mana to be able to like get the other creature you need out.
Right, yeah. But when you flip it, do you still have Convoke? I'm sorry.
No, you don't. No.
Yeah, So when you flip it, you don't have the way to Convoke. But yes, you still have the mana. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it can be a little awkward for sure. I honestly, most of all, I'm not going to be the person that like is wild about this deck and builds it probably. But someone is. And I am so excited to see what their line is that you do with 3 Hoarding Broodlords when it dies from Saw in Half and has persist, and you get to go 2 or 3 times. That sounds incredible.
This thing is so protected. You have no idea how many sinuses I'm casting. So,
oh my God, that's so funny. So that's everything from Lorwyn that I'm super excited about. Cool. So I think before we move on, I wanna answer something that's in
Let's
this
do a
box
question.
Here.
Should we do a question real quick? You guys still here?
Yeah.
All right.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
Nice. All right. I'm going to take this one here.
Read it in your head first, just in case.
Okay. Oh, yeah. There's like 80 swear words on this one. Yeah. I'm glad that I did this. Yeah. What commander do you wish was CEDH viable?
Ooh, okay. Do you have a standout?
Oh my God, there's so many. Are you kidding me?
Do I wish was CEDH viable? This is tough for me. I have a hard time in like hypotheticals. Like, is the question like, do I wish I could make it better so that it was CEDH viable?
I don't know who asked, so we can't ask.
The format was different so that what it did was CEDH viable. Tyler.
Yeah, I'm gonna treat it like it's that one, and it's actually the first commander I went and built for myself as a deck, which was Varel of the Hulkleed, the one that doubles the counters on anything.
Yes.
And I just love doing stupid mathy stuff with like doubling cube and that kind of thing. And it's very cute and like dumping it all into Helix Pinnacle, all that goofy stuff.
Okay.
And it is just not fast enough for CDH. It never has been, but like I just think it's a very fun, funky strategy.
Yeah.
And I would love it if that was CDH viable.
Yeah, I see that. I have an idea. Do you know what you're gonna answer?
You go first.
I think my idea is Reanimator. I wish Reanimator was more possible, or like Dredge, really like graveyard decks. Like obviously we have Underworld Breach and I love Underworld Breach, but a lot of the times it's just like you're a regular deck until you use your graveyard for one big combo turn, and then it's just like a combo.
Right.
Whereas like in 60 card formats, in Legacy, I love Reanimator. In Modern, every time there can be a graveyard deck, I want to play it. In Vintage, I like Dredge. Like, I want to be able to like use my graveyard for value and like self mill and Seder Wayfinder type stuff. And none of that stuff is really quite good enough in CDH.
Didn't you just build the Green Goblin?
I built Green Goblin and Terra, which are like two new strategies.
Does this not count?
It does. It's very close, but I've only played like less than 10 games with Green Goblin.
All right,
I don't know if it's good yet. But
Terra's not a graveyard deck. Like your Terra build just puts stuff into the graveyard and then it just sits there until you Underworld. Reach it away.
Okay, so you know what? You're actually right about that. Yeah, Terra does fit into the similar strategy. But
Master of Keys.
Yeah.
Rafine.
Well, those decks stink, though. But so Green Goblin can't be. I'm sorry if you played
So those are answers. Those are good answers, then. But, yeah.
So Green Goblin is perfect. And that's why I love Green Goblin, because it is like that graveyard strategy. And I'm hoping it can be like that. I'm hoping it can be more like that. But up until Green Goblin, which just got like printed like a week ago or something, or I guess it came out
today?
Today or something?
This weekend? Yeah.
No, last weekend, I thought.
Was last weekend the pre-release, or is this the...
It's all released.
This is released.
It's out. I don't know.
It's all out.
That wasn't until very recently that we had that. Up until now, it hasn't been good. So I'm hoping that Green Goblin is for real good and it can stick around, because you're right. It is a graveyard strategy. It's awesome.
Yeah, that is really cool.
I do not want your joy, so I hope it's terrible.
Yeah.
I bit him the finger, but I can't show it. What about you? Do you have a strategy?
I think I'm going to say Glyss of the Traitor, because it was a casual deck that I loved for a long time and is... Let's be real. Like, what do we need for this to be viable? We need a way to always give your opponents creatures and always a way for them to die, and then always a way for you to be able to cycle through something that's worthwhile in your graveyard.
If combos weren't allowed and everyone had to play fair, this Jund Glyssa deck would probably be all right.
It would be good.
It might work a lot more. If you just weren't allowed to go infinite, Glyssa probably is great in that metagame, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So that's what I think would have to change.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
But that makes sense. You want to Jund him out.
Kudo King Among Bears, I wish was CEDH viable.
Oh, yeah.
I just wish that anything about CEDH would allow me to play that card.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, cool. All right. Well, let's talk about the next set then, real quick.
Love to. That sounds great.
Which the next set we're going to after Lorwyn Eclipsed is going to be Secrets of Strixhaven.
Ooh.
This one, I don't really have any cards to talk about because they're all secrets.
Yeah, we can't talk about
the secrets of Strixhaven.
Unless this set is in combination with the deodorant brand. Oh. I don't have any other information about this one.
I don't know much. I don't know much about that deodorant brand. Secret is maybe, it's a deodorant brand. I think that's the reference.
That is, that's the joke. Oh, great. Now everyone is thoroughly enjoying that joke even more now.
Well, if nothing else, I think what we should say for Strixhaven is I think the special treatments in Strixhaven were really cool and like really well received.
True.
And if they're bringing back those same art styles, I feel like that's going to be very sought after and like really neat. Like, yeah, those were awesome the first time around.
And they did a good job of putting like really cool and useful cards in those spell mastery sets there too. So I hope that that's a trend that would continue with that.
And I want them to print Super Wandering Archaic. It's like twice as big. It's a 10-10. It copies the spell 15 times.
That would be so sweet. Oh, I love that.
Do you guys know, did we get Shocklands the last time we were in Strixhaven? Because I know it's like two colory, but it's a different faction. Do we get an equivalent of Shocklands? Did we get that? No, right? Scrylands.
There were
Scrylands last time. Scrylands came from Strixhaven? Oh, fun. Is that true?
There were Snarls.
Snarl lands.
Yeah, so that it's a 55 power move and has 95 hit. And when
what was their special defense?
It lowers both. Yeah, it's a spread move, so it's really strong on your Arcanine.
Pokemon joke.
Oh, goodness.
I was going to say maybe we'll get some more cool Shockland reprints, but I feel like
we're getting Shockland reprints in Lorwyn. So I don't think we're going to get.
That's my idea. Move on from that.
Fetch lands.
Fetch lands, yeah. Okay.
So then after that, you know what? Somewhere in between. We actually skipped one, because in between Strixhaven and Lorwyn, there's an unannounced Universes Beyond that's not going to get announced until the New York Comic Con.
Feels skippable. Should we speculate?
Well, I think there was a rumor that it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I saw the rumor.
Which will be great, because my boyfriend has been like pretty into CDH, and that will send him right over the edge. He's going to be all the way in.
Oh, yeah.
But it's definitely something comic-y, and it's not Marvel Superheroes, because that's the set that's coming after Strixhaven then.
Was there because of a Nickelodeon recently thing? Is that why we thought maybe
we got SpongeBob cards last year, and I think that kind of like opens the door with a lot of other things Nickelodeon then too.
Okay.
Avatar is also Cameron.
They're not gonna release Avatar, because I thought that was why everyone was thinking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, is because there was like another Nickelodeon thing coming or something. I don't know.
I mean, I guess maybe Avatar, but no spoilers. I'm literally on episode 4, the first watch through. Do not tell me anything, please.
Of Avatar?
Yeah, of Avatar.
Oh, okay.
For like, you won't talk.
Listen, I'm very busy. I only watch things when I'm crocheting. I had to get a crochet project that was gonna last long enough for Avatar.
I totally get it. I have no idea what's coming in New York Comic Con, but that'll be fun.
That will be fun. But Marvel Superheroes we know is coming, and this is everything not Spider-Man, and from what I've seen from images is also decidedly not X-Men either.
So this is like Avengers and
Avengers, but like and Fantastic Four, because I saw some art for the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
Which I think is why they made the new movie, is to partner with the set from next year.
Yeah, they made the movies to work with Magic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in that order. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they introduced the partner with mechanic. You know,
it's
gonna be four commanders in the command zone this time.
Do you think are we gonna get partners with in the Marvel set? That could be cool. Like Groot and the Raccoon.
How does that work in standard?
They just can't do it. There's no command zone in standard, right?
There's not. Well, not yet. They change the rules all the time. We could easily. Who's to say they tried the companions?
Watch out.
We can try it.
Maybe not that one.
I
am excited for that set, though. I was once a very huge Marvel fan. I haven't been quite as much recently, but still, even with the Spider-Man cards, I think they're awesome. It's so cool. The art treatments are so awesome. So, like, I can't wait for like a Hulk card and more Captain America stuff. I think it's gonna be cool.
The overlap has been awesome, and some of them have been like just really cool, like top-down designs of cards. Yeah. I think of Iron Man in particular, like the way they're capturing flavor within the mechanics of Magic is so satisfying.
Yeah,
it is awesome.
And Iron Man's another one that I always feel like is just about CDH. Like it's not exactly, but it feels so close, and like what it does feels really good, but it's a little expensive. I don't know. That's one that I think
a little bit. We had a local player who was playing it, and I played against it a bunch of times, and it was awesome for me because I was always playing Kinnan, and every time I just cloned it, did it, and it felt monolith and won. And he was like, I can't play Iron Man against you.
Oh, man. Kitten's really good.
Okay. That's so funny. We're going to talk about... We can fly through a couple more of these sets because we don't get as many previews for some of these. We're going back to J.R.R. Tolkien territory. That's his name, right? Who wrote The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit?
You can say Middle Earth.
Yeah,
that's where we're going. Yeah, it happens on Middle Earth.
Anyone excited for Hobbit?
Hobbit's going to be sweet. I'm excited for that one.
We're going to get a Smaug that's a real dragon and not just like a saga, right?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. That would be very cool.
One must assume we would get a cool dragon.
Because he's there, yeah.
Are you a big Hobbit fan? You like Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, and The Hobbit was like my first foray into fantasy. I read it when I was very young, and then many times, like, I'm, yeah. thing.
You know what's a weird, a little weird factoid about me? I have about 4 or 5 copies of The Hobbit in my house that I've never finished any of them.
Really?
I've started all of them. Just like individual copies of The Hobbit. All of my like uncles who are nerds and stuff were like, Dylan, you're a nerd. You would like The Hobbit. And they would give me another one for my birthday or whatever. And I'm like, great. And I read 50 pages and go, too much description about flowers and stuff. It was just very slow moving.
You haven't finished it?
I haven't finished it. I know it's embarrassing. I loved Lord of the Rings movies. I loved even The Hobbit movies. I thought were fine.
They're fine. Yeah.
I like them.
I am going to kidnap your fiance until you read The Hobbit. She's in trouble.
I know. I have the ability to read it many times over, too. You think I should, though. It's
I just don't have the ability to read.
It's hard, man. There's no pictures in that book.
We know.
It's really tough, man.
Yeah. But this one's going to be really cool. Then the next in-universe set we're going to is Reality Fracture.
What is this?
I don't know, but I'm really curious flavor-wise. Like I think Edge of Eternities did like way better than we were expecting, and the art especially was extremely satisfying. And I think the more that we're exploring themes that are more in common with like sci-fi stuff and a little outside of the normal in-universe kind of high fantasy, that seems to be going over really well. And I love that it's really expanding to cover all these like genres that are still within nerddom. You know?
Yeah, I like the sci-fi stuff. I think like maybe 5-10 years ago, I would have said gun on a Magic card, that's so silly. But now after seeing like Furby and SpongeBob on Magic cards, I don't care. Whatever. Put it
Like honestly, keep them coming.
Keep them coming. Yeah,
like surprise me with more.
Yeah,
at this
I think
point.
It's fun. Yeah. You don't have to use them if you don't like them, but if you do use them, they're so fun. And I think like they get a laugh out of the table. It's a good. I think
it's
good.
It's awesome. Well, I'm glad that you like the sci-fi stuff because we're going to Star Trek.
Ooh.
Which is also space
I
and
never
Earth?
Read Star Trek either.
You never read? I never read Star Trek either, yeah.
I was hoping that would piss him off, and it didn't.
No. But I'm sure there's books.
Well, there are. Yeah, I never read Star Trek, though. I watched only the Star Trek The Next Generation and nothing else. So I have a very small, I think, arguably, several of them are the good one. But I think that's the most popular. That's Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard. I think that's the iconic.
Okay, yeah, I know that one.
And where does William Shatner fit into it? Because I know now, this is how he got the job on the History Channel now, right? Was from his time on Star Trek?
Yeah, he's only done Star Trek and the History Channel.
I think that guy's a doofus. I don't
know anything about him. We don't have to talk.
Well, he's here.
Oh, no.
It's like, yeah, come on.
And we're out of here.
Oh, man, that's
Star
so funny.
Trek. You like Star Trek. Are you excited for the set?
I am excited for that set. I'm most excited because if somehow Data is like a very good playable commander, I am going to be really hyped for that.
Which one's that?
Data is like the android who's like, I don't really have emotions, but like, I don't know. He's just, you know, like he's a magic player emblem because he's just like, a little not great on the social stuff, but in a very endearing way, and he's trying hard. It is awesome.
Okay,
makes me feel right at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know nothing about Star Trek, so I am not excited for this set. I don't care. It's just I don't know anything about Star Trek.
What do we think? What's the temperature in the room on Star Trek? Any sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know that we're getting a USS Enterprise card. Like that's got to happen.
Station stuff.
Yeah. This is the reason why Station exists, right? Yeah. Is because they found out. Oh, hey, we can do Star Trek. Oh, well, look at this. Well, look at what we can do.
Yeah.
So,
okay. That's
we'll
cool.
definitely have stations again. And you know what? I bet that's also part of the reason why they made stationable things and vehicles be your commander.
Oh,
because the USS Enterprise is gonna slap.
Yeah.
And that thing, if that's not CEDH playable.
I hope so.
I hope it is. Yeah. I mean, you have time to change it, Wizard. So if you're listening right now.
Can I pluck a rabbit out of the hat?
Honestly, I want you to get 2 if that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that way you can read one and then Dylan can read one.
Oh, my God. Wait. I love yellow.
There's a lot of
yellow. Sorry if you run on anything other than yellow. Nice try.
What do we got? Boom. Okay.
Okay.
Right. This is a good one that you picked out. I'll read it first. Why do you let Tyler win? And that's a great question. Because I do, actually. He's not so good at magic, so it's for his esteem and his ego. So, yeah, you're right. I do let him win.
Thanks. Yeah, you're a real pal. I appreciate all of these years just letting me build up my self-esteem slowly.
It's for you. I love you, pal.
Every Cloud City tournament we've ever done, we like part of the NDA people sign is that we're not going to tell Tyler that we let him win. It's a whole thing. Yeah. Great. Well, I'm glad that we aired that out now, and now it's all out in the open. We all know. Yeah. That's so funny. What commanders do you dislike to see at the table?
Ooh.
And where do you tend to focus that player due to the disliked commander?
Where do you tend to focus that player?
I'm going to be honest. I don't really dislike playing any decks. I don't care. You can play whatever you'd like. I do understand the question. And, like, I'll be honest, lately, stacks, playing against stacks has not been the most fun for me. So, like, I could say something like that. It's not like I would, like, do anything about that. I'm not going to be like, no, I would not play your stacks deck, whatever. I'd still love to play it. The puzzle is interesting to me. But it does make the game a little bit tricky. And then I would also say sometimes, and I don't, sometimes when there's a deck that's not exactly a CDH deck that's at the table, this can be awesome and it can be really fun. But sometimes it, like, it weights the table in a kind of a weird way where, like, now there's not enough support for the turbo deck to, like, stop them from doing something. So it, like, makes the game feel a little bit, like, unbalanced or something. But again, like, dislike isn't really, like, the word that I would use. I don't even know if that was the word in the question. It just, that would be first that comes to mind is, like, decks like that. It makes the game just, like, different in a way that I don't know how to, like, operate around exactly.
Well, because our decks are built for, like, a specific metagame. And it's you know, that kind of stuff does happen, right? And we're not saying that, like, those decks don't have agency in the game,
because
they a lot of the time can end up winning in pods like that,
because
they're kind of built to do their own thing, and then if they're not being interacted with, they get the chance to just do their own thing.
I would say, I think for me, it is not all the time, but decks like Orvar and Krark and some things that are non-deterministic and require a lot of game actions, if either the player that's piloting them is not comfortable executing them at a reasonable speed, or if we hit the point where, like, really it's like we plainly should have conceded, but my other opponents are not willing to concede, then sometimes I will get a little bit frustrated. But this is the penance that I owe as someone who played Krark for a while, so I deserve it. That's fine.
It's part of the game.
That's what I get.
That's the game. Yeah.
I don't really have any commanders that I dislike to see. I think that there's, like Dylan, there's like, oh, stacks. Okay, now I have to figure this out. But like, that's just like how that pod goes. My next pod might not have the stacks player. So it's like, it changes up so frequently each game that I play that it's not like I feel any kind of animosity towards really a specific strategy or a specific deck. Because I know it might just be 1 to 3 games that I'm playing against it.
I love stacks because it's the only time I feel comfortable like playing Pokemon Go on my phone while I'm in the middle of a game and I don't feel rude. I'm just like, well, you cast another rod, so I get to play Pokemon Go on my phone.
Yeah. You have a jousting game on your phone.
That's
so funny. Nice. All right, we should move on to some of the cool Secret Lair stuff that we're getting that I'm very excited about.
Can we talk about The Office, the cards that have been?
Yeah, we got a couple of card images to show on a slide now, which I'm super excited about.
Can
we give the production team hand a huge round of applause, by the way? This was all super last minute, and they were so great about just like letting us use card images for this. So this is something that I'm way more excited about than anyone on Reddit than I've seen.
Dude, I would have never seen this one coming.
But now I can't wait for the I Think You Should Leave one when we get an actual chunky Atali that's like wizards printed.
Can you imagine if there's an actual chunky for my... Dude, that just blew my mind, and that could be a possibility from I Think You Should Leave.
I know, right? It's going to be so great.
Yeah, that could be really
good. I can't wait for that.
I think Recyclops is really funny.
The Recyclops is hysterical.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love it's the flip Garrick for that. I think it's like the perfect card to do for Recyclops. The Swords to Plowshares is going to be... I love that there's CEDH cards here, right? Swords to Plowshares is there. It's the perfect card for Dwight, who is just some aggressive salesman that's now given up his sword and is now in his farm. Like, it's the perfect flavor for him. There's Heliod.
I gotta pause you real quick. I need the audience to know, if they didn't know already, that Dylan has a tattoo of Dwight on the back of his cap. It's like the whole thing.
Tattoo.
So, yeah, now
Dwight
it's a Magic the Gathering
on
tattoo.
My leg. So, yeah, I'm very excited about that. The Swords to Plowshares, although I don't really play Swords as much anymore, if I do play Swords, I think I'm definitely going for this one first.
Yeah. I am on Swords in Timna Malkum.
Yeah.
But I am only on that card because it needs to be very controlling. But otherwise, I feel like most of my blue decks, I don't want to play Swords anymore.
You can have your creature. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm going to win around it.
Yeah. I'm going to move. Went around instead.
Yeah, I'm on Timna Dargo, and I will probably switch. Not only do I love Beats, but like it's also one of the only jokes I actually know from The Office, which I haven't seen. exciting.
I'm stoked.
And seeing Heliod is cool. I like that they put in like one like CDH-ish deck that like somebody could play. Like you could see Dwight at a tournament, and I think that's really fun.
Yeah. And the other one's Baral, Chief of Compliance, that's up there, but it's Dwight. assistant to the king.
That's so funny.
Which is very, that's a great funny. Joke. Yeah, I think they hit this one out of the park. I can't wait for all other 20 mainline members of The Office to get their own secret lair now, too.
And I think I also kind of like, at first, I think, like, this is another opinion, like, a couple years ago, I don't know that I would have had this opinion that I like that the reskins, that they just, like, they're not new individual cards. They're, like, all, like, hovering over old ones. But I think I do like it now. Like, I've kind of come over, the, like, with stuff like this, I would almost prefer this than, like, to have a real Dwight. I don't know why I feel like this is, like, I don't know. I like this version better. Like,
it still feels less serious than if we did, like, an entire Office set that was standard legal, and then we have to come up with, you know, a bunch of different Dwights for the set then, too. Like, I like this thematically way better.
Yeah.
For something like this.
Yes.
I think.
I would like to register my complaint that one of the few other things I know, which is when Jim dresses up as Dwight and pretends to be him, that there's not a card capturing that. Because that
was very like a phantasmal image that was.
Oh, dude, what a miss. That phantasmal image would have been great. Something.
Maybe hire fans, Wizards.
Yeah. You can take that idea if you see this. That
yeah,
no, us.
Yeah. Nothing here
for the next Office secret lair.
All right, let's move on to the next slide and see what the next one is.
Jaws!
Dude. This one was super cool. I want to read this one.
I haven't seen this yet, actually.
You haven't seen the Jaws?
I haven't seen this.
Wow. Well, I haven't seen the movie, but I saw the card. So I know what the movie's about.
Yeah. Is this the old movie, or is there a new movie?
I don't know. Is there a new movie? Yeah, why are we doing Jaws? Is there a new Jaws?
I mean, it's super iconic, and there's a great...
30th
anniversary.
You know what? That makes sense, because I've been thinking, you know, there's a lot of 80s stuff that's coming out next year.
A lot of 30 anniversaries.
Yeah, so I think this makes stuff.
Guys,
No. 30 years ago wasn't in the 80s.
No.
Oh.
No, we're just old.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Jaws is a 90s thing.
Okay, anyway, what's Jaws?
Wow, I'm old. All right, so this is... Oh, you want to say something?
I want to say I have something very important to say. We are almost certainly going to get a really good blue creature for Kinnan. Like, there's got to be, right? Like, out of their Jaws?
Jaws is red, and it's a secret lair, and all the cards from the Jaws secret lair are red.
Oh.
They're all red?
They all looked red.
Yeah, this is...
There's Sneak Attack. Thank you for including this one. This is great. Yeah. Sneak Attack, Panic at Amity Island. Yeah, they're all red cards.
What is that?
I refuse to believe this. Maybe the secret one in the back of the secret lair. It's got to be.
That's true. Might get another one. Yeah. I love the art for this one.
It's got to be because blood, right? That's why? Because blood?
Because blood. Yeah. I mean, let's think about it. Yeah.
There we go.
Blood token. Yeah.
You said it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just because, like, Jaws is a shark and the shark is in water doesn't necessarily mean that all water-based things have to be blue. They're just in around islands, but like humans are blue creatures and they're not all merfolk. So I think that the flexibility for sharks to be red is
okay. Can we read what it does? Can you?
Can I? Well, that's a question.
You're just stalking.
For 3 and 2 red, we have a legendary creature shark with trample and haste that says, whenever Jaws deals combat damage to a player, create that many blood tokens. Whenever a non-creature artifact is sacrificed or destroyed, Jaws deals 1 damage to each opponent. Oh, okay. So that's an outlet.
The reason why I wanted to talk about this is that sounds eerily close to like... an outlet, right? Mm-hmm. It's whenever a non-creature artifact is sacrificed
or destroyed. I don't know why they don't just say go to the graveyard, but maybe that would be too many words. Also, it's a 5/5. I didn't mention that. So every time it deals combat damage to a player, you make 5 bloods. That's kind of crazy. That's a lot of resources.
If they don't block, which they won't, because
it's a trample or haste. And then,
but like, who cares about the blood? Because you can do this with treasures, right?
Right.
Like, treasure loop, this just goes and pings the table.
Bingo, yes. I think that you would only care about it because it gives you 5 pseudo damage to deal at opponents, because whenever those artifacts are sacrificed or destroyed. Oh, because do tokens not touch the graveyard? Is that why
they do? No, they do go to the graveyard.
It, right?
Yeah. Okay, and so that you're thinking about the whole when a card goes to the graveyard, the tokens aren't cards.
But this is okay. So yeah, there's gotta be a loop that you can, but that's like a several card loop.
Right. I think we're in the vicinity of Mayhem Devil, where I have trouble imagining what this does that Mayhem Devil doesn't.
But
it is a bigger body, it is doing other interesting things too.
And it's in the command zone.
I may have missed it. Yeah. And it's just in the command zone. These are all like really interesting pieces of this card.
This feels like a deck that, like, a couple of players are going to be able to win 20 to 25% of their games. I'm not one of those players, but it does feel like it's... I don't know. It does cool stuff. I like that it's an outlet. The blood tokens, just they don't do much. They're loot, right? Is that?
It's a rummage.
Discard first and then draw.
That's still more cards you get to see. And then each rummage is also a ping.
You're probably doing like Underworld Breach stuff, so feeding the graveyard is good, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Honestly, you know, that's a great point, too. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. This reads like it could do something really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the comparison, though? If you're already in mono red doing artifact stuff, you're playing Magda, and this probably isn't better than Magda.
It's a different deck than Magda.
A completely different deck. Yeah. Completely different deck.
But you get to cut all the dwarves.
Yeah, that's
great.
True. If you don't like playing dwarves, you like sharks instead. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you play all the sharks.
All the sharks.
Shark
Invid,
yeah. Once I assemble three artifact sharks, I'm going to win the game.
Yeah. Maybe it's a casual card. Probably a really fun casual card.
Yeah. But I like this one. I want to read another question before we talk about the next secret layer. I'm having fun with these questions.
Let's do the question. Yeah.
Yellow. Do a yellow one.
All right. We've only read questions off of yellow cards so far.
Yes, that's
true. There's a place on Ocean Avenue. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Cameron's very funny. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm hysterical. All right. If you could change one commander to... Sorry, everyone.
Another pink one.
We already answered something about a CEDH. What did you say about reading them in my head before I did a whole thing on them?
Just a quick glance so we know for sure.
All right. Here we go.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
How do you feel about Glarb Calamity's Augur in CEDH? Like, is he good in the current meta? And do you see him being good in the future? And then there's a picture of a cat.
Is Glarb good? Is that the question?
Let me see that cat.
Yeah, this is the cat.
Yeah, that's the cat.
That's a good cat. Yeah, it's a solid cat.
Glarb, how do you feel about Glarb?
I like Glarb.
I feel like Glarb's one that's an almost for me. I loved Glarb when it came out. I do think the strategy's interesting.
I played him for a while.
I tried Doomsday. I think Doomsday is a solid line in that one. Doomsday is a risky card. So, like, Glarb kind of supports a controlling strategy, I think, and playing risky win conditions to me normally isn't what you want to do.
I guess the theory is that, like, you can play a risky win condition because you're controlling and, like, you controlled the board to a place where now you can win.
When you're going for it, you got a grip full of counterspells because that's the deck.
It's just a little harder to do that in the current meta all of the time.
You look like you got something to say.
I love that it is just the best counterbalance deck there has ever been. Like, that is so cool.
It does have
like,
that
is really cool. But I think in general, in the current meta, Glarb seems a little slow to me. Like, most control strategies have to be able to kind of establish control, I think, a little more quickly than Glarb can, because it just has to take a turn off to play this big creature in order to really get its plan going.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of pieces that it works incredibly well with. Like, it can really, like, take over the game for sure and lock everyone out of doing anything, but I would not take it to a tournament just because of the speed thing, but I don't think it's going to like just suddenly disappear from the meta either. I think we're probably going to keep seeing it here and there, and it's going to like end up being something along the lines of, I guess a comparison would be like Toxtril, where you see it every once in a while. Like, I think, you know, a year from now we're going to be in Toxtril territory where it's like, oh, haven't seen that in a minute, but like it's still a solid deck.
Still can
I mostly see that card in Glarb now.
Yeah.
I see that. I feel like Glarb is solidly tier two.
Yeah.
Like, it's made a nice home for itself in there. I feel like I'm going to take words out of Dylan's mouth, but I remember you saying, like, oh, why am I not just playing Tim the Thrasios? Like, it feels like the same thing, except you get two extra cards in your starting hand.
Tim is just so insanely broken. It's ridiculous. I always forget.
Tim is broken.
It's just broken enough.
I think Glarb.
I feel like it is like the best control deck. I do think it's probably the best control deck we have in CDH. I do think it does control really well.
Because of the counterbalance,
because you can play things like the 4-mana green Revenant, Destroy All Enchantments,
Revenant Silence.
And there's a lot of like removal spells that Glarb uses really well. It's a great like Toxic Deluge deck. I just don't feel like control is like the best strategy right now.
But Katara coming out as a new control deck.
I really want to try that one.
Can we take a deviation and talk about Katara for a second?
Yeah, we can. Yeah,
because I know you've been building this deck and you think it's CDH, and I don't know that it is.
You know, I do want to talk about that. This is a good point because we talked about it on the podcast already without you.
Yeah.
And you're the one that's actually building it, Tyler. K-A-T-A-R-A. You know, we were watching Independence Day on Hotel TV, and Mae Whitman, who does the voice of Katara, is in Independence Day. She plays the president's kid.
Oh, I never guess what I'm going to say.
You've never seen it.
I'm sorry.
Katara, waterbending master, one in a blue, legendary creature, human warrior, ally, 1/3. Whenever you cast a spell during an opponent's turn, you get an experience counter. And whenever Katara attacks, you may draw a card for each experience counter you have. And if you do, discard a card.
So I was so excited about this one, in part because it is an explicit invitation to run a pet card of mine, which is Leyline of Anticipation. I love that card.
Okay.
This really, if you are able to not only cast instants on your opponent's turns, but also cast your other stuff on their turns, that is fantastic. Yeah. So any reason to play those is awesome. But also, experience counters are so good because they're almost impossible to interact with in any way. Like, once you have them, you just have them. And that's too bad. They're there. This is a cheap commander that is reasonably easy to power out on turn one and just immediately get rolling with, like, a loot. And then by, you know, turn two, you really hopefully should be able to draw, you know, three cards or so every time you're attacking. And I think that might be enough gas to allow you to keep up control with the entire table. I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. How much is her toughness?
1/3.
1/3. Okay.
Hex Parasite can't even remove counters from players.
Oh,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, can't even do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been playing Green Goblin a little bit. We talked about it a little bit, and I've discovered that playing Norman Osborn on the front side is normally a trap. I probably shouldn't do it because of the fear of Bowmaster. It's too risky. Now Green Goblin's 6 mana. But this has 3 toughness, so it can survive a Bowmaster. But you're also drawing a bunch of cards. So like if someone flashes in a Bowmaster, you might be a little weak to that. Any care?
Oh, Bowmaster is gonna be horrible.
Okay, it's just like that's just a bad card.
Time.
Okay,
we
one. I think we just decided that we don't care about that anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to be involved in that we thing anymore, though, because I feel like I am losing a lot to Bowmaster recently in the last month, and I feel like I want to avoid that.
You're going to go back to, like, only playing things in your deck that don't get pinged by Bowmaster?
I don't know. Realistically, lately, I like the Green Goblin is a 3/3, whereas Rograk is a 0/1, because I feel like I've been getting my Rogs pinged off recently, like having access to the 3 toughness. It actually is, I don't know. Can I
let me tell you about Dargo. It is huge. It's 5 toughness. You can't kill it no matter what you do.
It's
awesome.
And it's also a great Bowmaster deck to play in your deck. That's true. Yeah.
Also
true. Dargo team, it does seem pretty sweet. Yeah, the Katara, my fear with that is it's too slow. You have to do an action, and then you have to make it back to your turn. You have to do an attack. It doesn't have evasion? Does it have evasion?
No evasion.
So you have to get through. Is it on attack or damage?
You don't have to get through. Everything. It's on attack.
It's just on attack. So you just get attack. And then it just feels like there's a lot of time for people to plan around, but you're playing all interactions, so maybe you can stop
them. I know, but I want it to be good.
Okay, you just want it to be good. That's fair. If you want it to be good, I believe. Yeah. But that's my concern with that. It's just like it's going to do nothing for a whole turn cycle. It's going to build up threats in people's minds, and then you draw the cards later.
You still have to win in mono
blue. And then you still have to win in mono blue, which is notably difficult.
Also tough,
I think. Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the slides. We got a couple more secret layers I want to run through here real quick.
This one's insane. And also I know. Another old 80s one that is strange.
Metal. Really cool. So this is the one of the couple of Iron Maiden secret layers that we're getting. I don't know too much about Iron Maiden besides the fact that Number of the Beast is on Guitar Hero. And so is
obviously
another song is on too.
I think the thing that I love about this, and I think I saw it right earlier. No, I didn't. Never mind.
Yeah, so this is the Eddie. There's a Windfall in here, which is super CEDH player, which is really cool. We're looking at a Nekuzar version of Eddie, which is also really cool, who is probably another one of those commanders that we could say is just not quite CEDH.
Almost. Isn't it weird, though, that we got... This is like a Nekuzar secret lair, basically.
It's right?
Does it really work in the Nekuzar strategy? And we already got one of those for, like, another thing. I mean, Nekuzar is super popular, so I understand wanting to do it, but I almost like, couldn't we have like put these cards on like other cards for another commander? That's like
we'll get them for other cards.
We'll get them for
commanders.
Other ones,
don't worry.
Yeah. Like, Nekuzar feels like it gets a lot of love, and maybe it that's just
we need more Atalis.
Yeah,
that's why we need to go to I Think You Should Leave Universe.
Yeah, exactly. More Atalis, more Kinnans, more Sisses, and Rograks.
So, yeah, we're not biased,
and everything else doesn't matter.
Yeah, more of what we love. This is awesome. Windfall is great. I'm probably gonna put Windfall in my rocks. Yeah, that Windfall.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, and then we got even more. There's like a Lignify here.
Is that
Grim Tutor? Fear, yeah. Oh, so that's also it. Animate Dead is also CEDH playable.
Animate Dead is huge. That's
yeah. There's a lot of decks that play Unearthed sometimes. Like now that Gifts on Enola, packages can include it too. Yeah, so this one's cool.
Anyone excited for Iron Maiden? Any Iron Maiden?
Yeah. The Number of the Beast was my best song on Guitar Hero 3 by far.
Like the one you did the best at?
It was the one I did the best at, yeah. I could get like a 500,000 score on it. It was
I didn't know that
so
about
good.
You. That's nice.
So then they fly you out to meet the guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, except it was a scam and I got beat up in an alley. Yeah. all right, let's move to the next slide then. I think that it's some more...
Some more cool things.
Of course it's some more cool things. Yeah.
This is another one that I was convinced was a joke before I saw it.
We don't have to spend a lot of time on these. We can move over to the next slide because it's some more Furby stuff on this one too.
Yeah,
the, real quick, the first one, way on the left, the
sphere of, what is
sphere
it?
Sphere of safety.
Yeah.
I love that the art is Furbies flying into the sphere of safety and just like getting knocked off of the wall.
Is that Aurelia? Is that who that is? That can't be Aurelia. Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's
dude, this is what we talked about, mixing the worlds where there's like magic characters with the universes beyond.
This is
stuff.
What we've been talking about for a long time.
This is what I want. I want more stuff like this. I want
what we're about to show next. I say that like we're the showcase.
I want to say real quick about Furby. Is there Furby lore? Like is there a story behind Furby? Are there comics or movies? Does anyone know?
I'm starting to think that there's not based on what this
and I will a quick like that feel if you
Yeah,
that's awesome.
This is the one I'm mostly excited
about. Of course I'm going to play this one. Are you serious? Like,
Oh, this thing, all of them so look fun. Absolutely metal and gnarly.
There's like a
Demir
one that's coming up, I think, too, where it's just like a mortifying Furby with a huge mouth or something. The Serum Visions
The Serum
is cool.
Visions is so sick.
It looks so noble. That's so fun.
It does, yeah. Oh, man, I love these so much.
Yeah, and I love how many of them.
Huge mouth.
Yeah.
This is nightmare fuel out of, like...
I will, if I may, and I hate to give a critique, and I don't, you know, obviously, if it's a little bit, it's like an ad. Like, it's, you know, they're just like a product. They don't have lore. You know what I mean?
Look, but yo,
like,
this is,
cares.
It's way better, as long as, the bar is Lovesack. You were talking about this the other day.
Yeah.
The bar was Lovesack. So this is way cooler than that. Awesome, at least.
I love that it's fantastic. Like, I love that it's, like, silly and, like, over the top, and you would never expect it. It is going to be fun to cast the Furby spell.
Oh, my God. Especially, I can't wait for the whole bigger horn.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing is. Is so cool. I've thought about building like casual Umbris decks before.
Yes.
And now this kind of makes me, this is might push me over the edge. I really want to do that.
I'm upset about is I don't think any of these cards are Sissei cards, and I'm trying to do as many secret layers as possible.
That's true. You know, I'm on Holberger Horror in VV, so I think I might have to get this for that.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, that sounds sweet. Okay. Is there another secret layer that's on another slide next? What's coming up next?
Ooh.
Oh.
Yes,
this was just too good. This reminded me of when I tried to figure out what Demonic Consultation did at the last live show, and I had no idea what it was. Yeah, this is what it felt
this is
like.
What it feels like when you're looking.
This was me
does.
And my therapist afterwards.
I don't know if this is from something or if this is a reference to something or if this is just like cool, interesting art. I don't know the backstory behind this, but it is cool.
It's just cool, and it's a CEDH card, and that's why I wanted to look at it again.
Who's excited? Anyone going to use this consultation? Couple people.
Yeah.
It's
sweet.
Okay, cool.
It's sweet. Yeah. All right, and then we'll do one more slide before I go to another question. No, we're not. No, I want to do another question before we hit up the next stuff, because this is going to segue into a section that I'm mostly excited about, because there's a lot of commanders that are going to be from the PlayStation stuff. So I want to answer a green question this time. Oh, okay. All right. If you had to choose one card to be unbanned, Dockside or Mana Crypt, which would it be and why? And which new commander would benefit the most?
Do you have something?
Dockside or Mana Crypt?
Or Mana Crypt. If we had to choose. If I had to choose, you have something?
No, go for it.
If I had to choose, I would not...
That's not a choice.
Okay.
That's not a choice. Yeah.
Because
my choice is also, I'm very happy with the ban list changes from last year.
Yeah.
I like where the meta's been. It's made Itali better, so I don't want them back.
I think if I had to choose, if I was forced to, I would say, like, Manicrypt. Well, I don't know. I don't really know. Man, I guess, I mean, Dockside's the one that I personally would want to see back because I used it a ton and I thought it was great.
Oh, and nobody else used Dockside.
And nobody else used it.
Only I was a dilling card through and through.
I don't know. Everyone wants that one back. Realistically, I don't know. It's hard to say because I don't really want, like, I'm happy with where it's at.
I'm going
to
say Manicrypt because I've liked the play pattern now of being okay running out my rocks because now the only thing I have to worry about is Rhystic Studies and Mystic Remoras. And instead of having to worry about, like, oh, this is going to feed Dockside now, so
that's true.
Win later.
That's true.
Like, I like that there's less opportunities to mess up by someone's Cyclonic Rifts, and then you just run out all of your rocks again, and someone goes, oh, I'm glad you did that, because my Dockside got bounced.
Yeah.
And it's way better than the Dockside for three that I first did when it wasn't Cyclonic Rift.
If I had to choose, I think I would choose Jewel Lotus. I know that's not one of the options, but realistically, I think I like Jewel Lotus more because Manicrypt, like, Manicrypt being the only thing that does the coin flip thing at the beginning and no one flips a coin, everyone rolls a die. I think it's just like weird. I don't know why. It's just like the only thing in its class that does that. It feels kind of strange. And then I agree with you a big about the Dockside thing. CDH feels way more healthy when I can just like jam out my stuff rather than having to think about Dockside Extortionist.
Yeah, I really don't like the suppressive effect that it had on artifacts and enchantments. It kind of shuts down certain strategies merely by existing. It makes it really hard to not be in blue for clones or red for dark side, so on and so forth. I'm definitely also in the Manicrypt camp.
And at Manicrypt, at the same time, you know, there's a lot of criticism about Thassa's Oracle is that it wins out of nowhere.
Right.
I have won with a Dockside Extortionist out of nowhere all of the time. You would go last and no one would think you have everything and you would just go Dockside. Oh, look at this. I have Finale of Devastation in my hand for a meal.
Yeah.
Oops. You had no idea I had any of this. It's kind of like the same effect.
Yeah, so. 100%. Yeah, but I think Jewel Lotus, I don't think Jewel Lotus had any of those negative things that we mentioned. You know, it doesn't really have this thing. You don't have to play around it. All it does is like makes your commander more insane some of the time. And for like the formative commander, I think that's okay. I don't think it does anything truly too negative to the format. If anything, I think having those big commanders play a bigger role is nice for CDH. I think that Tivit and Atraxa being better, I think, is a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, cool. Should we talk about?
I want to talk about some PlayStation.
This one, some of these, the partner. Go on. Go.
Yeah. So these are really cool. So the main thing with the PlayStation cards is that we're getting like a bunch of different games in this whole little secret lair area here, and a couple of these games mean that there's relationships between a bunch of different characters, which means that we have a new excuse to get partners back.
Right.
And I really like what they're doing here. We can see Ellie and Joel on the screen. These characters are from The Last of Us. But specifically either one or two. I guess there's a version of Ellie that's from two and a version of Ellie that's from one.
I don't know anything about this game.
I played the first 15 minutes of The Last of Us 1, and I broke up with the girl that I was seeing at the time. I didn't have access to the game anymore. And it was for the better.
Because of the game. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man.
But this is really cool. So the main thing that they have, I don't think that either of these are insanely busted. As we can see, Ellie says that she can distract the horde. So whenever a player attacks one of your opponents, that attacking player creates a tapped 1/1 black fungus zombie creature token with a name I can't pronounce. That's also attacking that opponent. And Joel says that he has Menace. And whenever a creature token dies, I like this, put a +1/+1 counter on Joel and draw a card, but it only triggers once each turn.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting about this is that they also have partner survivors, which is really cool. And the other Ellie that is black red also has partner survivors, which means that you can have two commanders if they have this ability, which is partner survivors.
So you could partner Ellie with Ellie?
You could partner Ellie with Ellie and have an Ellie deck.
Yeah.
I play Ellie. I like saying that.
It's
fun
to say. I hope it's good.
Yeah. I don't know why you would do that and not want to play Joel, though. Because Joel is the card draw. He gets you in more colors. Like he allows you to play green as well. I don't think this is going to bust anything open, but this opens the door to other IPs that have survivors in them.
Right.
So that way you could do this with, like, have a Joel and a Jack from Lost or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
You can pair them up. Because what I'm also excited about is I really want to talk about the Kratos. I don't have images for Kratos up here quite yet.
He's got partners with son or partners with father.
Yeah, so there's a Kratos that's Stoic Father and an Atreus Impulsive Son that have partner father and son. Oh. So that way when we go to the Star Wars,
which hasn't been announced, and we
which
don't
hasn't been announced, but
does.
We can we'll get a father and sons Luke and Darth Vader,
yeah.
And then that way you can play Darth Vader Kratos.
Sure,
which is insanely cool.
The God of War crossover, yeah. That Star Wars fans have been clamoring for. That.
Yeah, I know those two fan bases overlap a lot because there's a lot of similarities.
Partner Survivors is interesting. It's basically like it's Friends Forever. That's kind of what it is, right? It's Friends Forever with a different name. You can partner with it with another commander that has the same keyword attachment or whatever. We don't know if that's going to be good, but having two commanders, if any of them says the word card draw on it, I feel like we like always look past those commanders, and like sometimes they're actually good. Just like having two commanders is very powerful, and if any of them give you any advantage that you can like capitalize on, that could be good. So
I agree, but it does have the triggers once per turn text, right? And Taru Taru is the other one that I think of a lot with this, where it's just like, man, if this did trigger as many times as it could, this is so much more busted. Yeah. And on the one hand, I'm glad they've started like using that lever in card design to like, you know, be able to print really powerful effects, but say, okay, but you can't go absolutely hog wild with it. But also sometimes like I wish you could just go nuts with it.
I would like to go hog wild, please. Yeah. Thank you very much. That is the format I choose.
Olympics baseball. That's a local joke to us that no one would get, but that's something for my parents, I guess. But I mostly like these cards, again, for the implication of what is to come in the future. But we did get a couple of other characters from other PlayStation games that I'd like to point out here, like Nathan Drake from the Uncharted series.
Yeah.
This is Nathan Drake, Treasure Hunter, who's a Grixis commander, costs Grixis, a 3-2 legendary human rogue with first strike. You may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast spells you don't own or to activate abilities of permanence you control but don't own. And then whenever Nathan Drake attacks, exile the top card of each player's library. I like that. That's like a tally.
Looking like
and
a tally.
You may cast this a spell from among those cards.
A spell.
It somehow feels like it's in between like Kefka and also Rev is what I'm thinking of. And it's really interesting space. I feel like this is just worse than Kefka every time, probably. But getting the card advantage off of your opponent's libraries is really cool. And sometimes you exile like a key piece or something.
Yeah.
Like, it is awesome text. I think it might be just shy of powerful enough, but I was kind of excited about that.
Is the card face down when you exile, or does everyone get to see? Does it mention?
No, I think it's face up, right?
Is it face up?
Exile the top card of each player's library, implies face up.
Face up, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you, I think, on all points. I don't quite think this one's quite there, but it's another one that's, like, close. It's card advantage, and card advantage from your opponents can be really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
What do you got?
I thought there was something else about a treasure with that, but I think that was something else that I found from something else. Yeah. And then the other one I want to talk about real quick is Alloy Survivor. No, Savior of Mirrodin. Is that how? Are there any Horizon Zero Dawn fans here? Is it pronounced Aloy? Oh, boy. Well, I didn't even get the first part. That wasn't even what I thought I said wrong.
We were asking about that second
part. I wanted Mirrodin. I wanted to know if I said that right. That's so funny. But that makes sense. Aloy. And then Savior of where?
Meridian.
Oh, so not Mirrodin, not Cameron, the plane of metal.
Yeah, Cameron, you did great on the of.
Yeah. I did great on the
right. Let's go.
Oh my God. Thank you. At least everyone knows this is real in my character. Yeah. All right, so Aloy is 3, a green and a blue, 3/5 legendary human warrior that has vigilance and reach, and in you, all things are possible.
Oh.
So jot that down. Whenever one or more artifact creatures you control attack, you discover X, where X is the greatest power among them. I thought this was just interesting because it says discover X on it, and I like those words.
That's good words.
Yeah. It's the artifact creature thing that makes this a little bit more difficult. You're in a blue-green artifact-based creature deck, but I don't know. That's cool.
What's discover again? It's explore, kind of?
No, exile the top cards of your library. Oh, sorry. I interrupted.
It's cascade, kind of.
It's cascade, kind of. Okay, so you go until you hit something that's 5 or less or something like that.
But you can choose to put it into your hand.
That's what it is.
Yeah,
okay.
So Pantlasa is the big discover commander, which I would say kind of qualifies as like a Fringe CDH deck. Like it can hang, sort of. Discover is a very powerful effect.
Yeah.
And I love this because it's Simic, and I love Simic no matter what form it's taking. But what it's asking you to do is like attack with big artifact creatures, and this is not normally something we're doing in CDH. So I think it is probably too much build around to break into CDH, but it is definitely a deck that I think is likely to be very powerful at casual tables.
Yeah.
For the same reasons that Pant Laza is, because like you get to play huge stuff and then go find more huge stuff.
Ooh, okay.
For free.
I can see that.
I agree. I think this is going to be an insanely busted
casual
bracket four deck in particular, where like you get to play Urza in your deck and just like make it insanely.
Okay.
Yeah, like the constructs. I think the artifact constructs are going to be what makes this really good, because they can easily get huge.
Let you
discover X for a ton that way.
Oh, okay.
I think that's going to make it really strong. Yeah, and then the last one of the PlayStation. That's the name of the plane
that they're on.
PlayStation. Jin Sakai from Ghost of Tsushima, who is one in Esper for a legendary human samurai who's a 2/4 that says whenever he deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card, which I like. And whenever a creature you control attacks a player, if no other creatures are attacking that player, you can choose one. It can either gain double strike or it can't be blocked until end of turn.
Only maximum of one card per turn it draws, because only
when Jin Sakai deals combat damage.
When it itself, okay.
Yeah, but this is like a weird, like if you want to play Timna in the 99 kind of deck.
This feels like it's purposefully meant to look like a CDH deck and strategy, but is realistically not going to be as good as like Timna and stuff. That's what I'm getting right away.
Yeah. I think so too. Yeah, I would immediately compare this to Timna Malcolm right away.
Mm-hmm. And Timna Malcolm feels a lot better, I feel like.
Much better. I think the two lines of text that aren't draw a card on this are like, they seem like they would be relevant, except you're an Esper, so you're really not, like, it's not like you have access to Professional Facebreaker and some of the other things that really make like a very attack strategy appealing. So I think this probably isn't there, especially when it's one mana off of Marnius mana, which is definitely just more card advantage.
But this one's cool because there's an awesome new Born Upon the Wind that we're getting with this.
Can I see?
Which is very sweet. I really like that.
Oh, nice.
It's cool.
You want to just pass it around?
Yeah, pass it around.
Let me pass
have we gotten this confirmed yet? Does this confirm that like we can see reprints from like Lord of the Rings in other areas? Have we gotten that before? Like, this is a Lord of the Rings card, but now it's reprinted somewhere else? We probably have. But to me, this feels like the first time I'm seeing that.
That's a great point. I kind of forgot that was a Lord of the Rings card. Yeah, I feel like that was always on the table.
Maybe it
was. The hard part is just the flavor. How do you fit Vivi Ornateer into another set, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking that we'll end up getting to fix that problem is that we'll get like Universes Beyond Masters at some point. Ooh. And then that way, like, it's so just about the draft format. It's not about like trying to create a world
that would
instead.
That would be cool.
I think that would be a good way to be able to do that. But I do like this as like a way that you can take other cards that aren't necessarily like, you know, specifically flavored to one set, and we can put them into other things.
Yeah, that
I like
sense.
That too. Yeah.
Should we pick out another question?
Get two.
I'm going to do it this time because I have
it. Yeah. Okay. That sounds great.
I'm going to pick two here.
How's everyone doing so far?
Still with us?
Nice. All right. I realize we're talking a lot, so I just want to check
in
with everyone.
I got one here that's good, and boom, yes. Okay, first one. Where is Nate? Love, Jeremy. Reactive. Hello, Jeremy. Nate, that's a great question. Nate's here? Is Nate here? There he is, over here. Everyone say hi to Nate.
Hello, Nate. Thank you for being here.
It looks like he's leaving, so goodbye, Nate.
All right, goodbye, Nate. See you later.
Nate is another one of our players. Obviously, everybody knows Nate. He's a great guy, but he's got other stuff to do. Do y'all have any fun pet cards that you try to slot into decks, even if it isn't 100% the best?
We have a whole podcast coming up on this.
Spoilers? Don't spoilers.
Well, I already said Leyline of Anticipation. I mentioned that one earlier, and I think it's like close to a reasonable card a lot of the time, but that is definitely one that I like always want to put in, and then I'm like, I shouldn't.
I'm sorry about that. You didn't know that I had that on the list.
I wouldn't remember. I black out during the podcast, remember? So I have no idea what.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got two more, though, because I want to get two good ones. You said get two good ones.
There we go, And Nate left after
and
we
then
called
Nate
him
left,
out,
yes,
so,
we have to get two ones close to Nate. Dylan, are you tired of playing against Atali? Yet from right, not yet.
Not yet. Are you sure?
Getting close now. And the other one is, what do you think about stacks in CDH? Does it have a place, or is it just too slow? From Josh L2E.
We talked about stacks a little bit.
Did I
just
get
let us
bum question?
No, because this goes into it more. Because I think what really has made stacks not so good is the continuation of timed rounds in CEDH tournaments, especially as CEDH tournaments continue to grow.
Yeah. I think the time right is a big thing, and not even necessarily because of the Stax player per se. It is, but it's because as the opponents of the Stax player, it takes a long time to think about how in the world you're going to win this game when you're completely locked out of it. So people take a lot of times playing against, take a long time playing against it. And since we don't have like a great way to be like, please hurry up, please hurry up. Like, obviously you can say that, you can call a judge and get for a slow play or something like that, but it's hard without a clock. I think my microphone, did anyone hear anything of what I said? Sorry about that. So something.
It's hard to play without a clock. Yeah. So while I agree that, like, you know, it isn't an awkward spot when it comes to the tournament scene, et cetera, I think if we find ourselves in a position where Stax decks are just like no longer viable because they take too long or because everyone kind of agrees that we don't want this in tournaments or something, then we're in a spot where just every deck is in a race. And like there, I don't think there is a viable like counterbalancing effect to that. And an all turbo meta with nothing else, I think is probably not going to be that fun to play in. Like I think that will narrow the format too much. So Stax has an important role. I genuinely think it has to be there. And I, you know, while control is almost viable, you know, we talked about Glarb, we talked about Katara. Like there are decks that approximate control and do some controlling things. Stax kind of is the closest we get to real control in CDH. So I think super important role. Don't want to see it go anywhere. But also, when I'm under like a Clarion Conqueror, I do want to die. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I feel like you're right. It's just kind of not the right time for Stax. Like we need the all turbo meta to come back in order for Stax to be impactful again. That's kind of what made Stax good in 2022. When it, like, when Nota was at her peak and all that jazz, like, that's what made it good, was that everyone was on Rock's Eye. Ad nauseum was the best thing you could do for quite a while, and this is how we combated that. And even before that, people were saying Stax isn't viable. Like, you can't CEDH and Stax. That's not CEDH, right? But, like, it definitely, I think you're right. Like, it is something that kind of needs to exist. It's just where we're at in the tournament meta, it just doesn't really exist. And you can exist as a Stax player in the tournament meta, but you have to be able to win the game. Like, what I liked about Timnathana Blood Pod is that you played one-card win conditions like Birthing Pod. You slam Birthing Pod, you slam Vivian on the Hunt. There's a line that you can go through so that you win the game immediately. And your Stax pieces weren't there to lock the table out for 2 hours. It was just to lock the table out for 10 minutes.
Just until you get to 6 mana. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you can go around the table a couple times. But I think you're also right, Dylan. Like, it does slow down your opponents, too, because they're thinking about their play, and then you play a Stax piece, and they go, okay, I have to completely rework in my head what I'm doing. And even though I'm only allowed to play one card a turn, I have to think really hard about what the most impactful card I could play on that turn is. So, like, having fewer decisions makes every decision harder, realistically.
Yeah, big time. Can you guys hear me now? Yes? Nice. Okay, cool. I will say also, I feel Stax works a little bit better as an accoutrement, so closer to the mouth. That feels worse. You guys were saying closer. I think maybe further. I'm going to try like around here. Does this feel normal?
You're giving the sound guy in the back a headache.
Like, oh, he's like, I think Stax works better as like, I don't know, like a little salt and pepper rather than the whole meal, if that makes sense. I like it better when you like could have like a slow-ish deck and you use just Ranger Captain and Drannith Magistrate and just one or two things to slow the table down just long enough for you to tempo the game out and get a win. I think Stax pieces work better like that than like dedicated Stax. Like, yeah. Obviously, this being said, we lost to Winota yesterday with dedicated Stax,
a
right?
Turn one Archon of Emyria crushed us.
That can still be very good.
Hard.
Yeah, that can still be very good. But I think overall the Stax pieces work better as a little addition rather than a full dedicated role in your deck.
Totally. And I think one more thing that's worth saying here is, you know, as we're talking about how Stax plays an important role, otherwise we would be all turbo, so on and so forth. We've talked before, I think on some of the podcasts too, about how there tends to be a little bit of a rock, paper, scissors between turbo, mid-range, and Stax. And they kind of go through these natural cycles where like one feels kind of ascendant, like we've really felt like we're in a turbo meta. And then that sort of gets more of the cheap Stax pieces to end up in decks like Magda has slowly picked up like a couple more. Like a lot of decks will slowly slot in more Stax. And then there will be some breaking point where mid-range begins to feel good again because it can just hang through the stack stacks in a way that Turbo really can't. And this is the cycle. Like, you know, we go through this like every year and a half or something.
Elton John wrote a song about it that they put at the beginning of The Lion King. So
I'm sorry. Can you explain that one again? I missed that joke.
The cycle of life, I think.
The cycle of life. Yeah, that's the song. It's called The Cycle of Life. Yeah.
I got the music.
Everyone knows that one.
Yeah, the cycle of, yeah.
Circle, I would have gotten it. Sorry.
No, I don't know that.
Circle of Protection Life. Come on, everyone knows that.
Circle of Protection Life.
All right. Very musical.
All right, I have a couple more cards that I want to quickly go over before we wrap up the rest of the show with some more questions here. We're getting more Final Fantasy cards.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah,
well, good, because we talked about them already, so glad you did see them. Like we did for the Lord of the Rings Universes Beyond in 2023, we got some holiday bundles that had some extra cards that ended up getting us some pretty nice CEDH staples like Legolas's Quick Reflexes. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure that I did not completely blow past these like I did the Lord of the Rings ones a couple years ago. Instead, see if there's anything good here. I think there might be something. Have you seen, is it called Photocopy? What's the name of this card? Flash Photography.
Flash Photography.
Wow, someone knows my brain at least a little bit. Yeah. Flash Photography, here it is. I found it again. Yeah, this is 2 and 2 blue for a sorcery that says you can cast the spell as though it had flash if it targets a permanent that you control.
Ooh, yeah.
And you create a token of a copy. What? No, that is what it says. You create a token that's a copy of target permanent, and you can flash it back for 4 and 2 blue.
Yeah, it's kind of like a clever impersonator.
Basically like a clever impersonator.
I don't think that's that much like a clever impersonator.
Sure.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's doing a lot more when it's targeting your permanents and has the ability to go at flash speed, and the fact that it's going from the graveyard is like really appealing there. So I think there's definitely something to this. I just mean it is more flexibility, I think.
Oh, I thought you were saying that it was worse.
No. I think it's probably better.
It's probably better. Yeah, I was at first, it didn't feel like it was that good to me, and then Cam mentioned that this is like probably better than Clever Impersonator, and that one sees play. The issue is Clever Impersonator is a creature, and I think that's why Kinnan likes it, and I think that's why other decks maybe like it.
Less counterable, too. Like, this is a sorcery.
Whereas this is a sorcery, but, like, more decks would care about sorceries, I feel like.
I think you should be evaluating it the way we evaluate, like Imposture Mech. Like, if your deck already wants Imposture Mech, then you probably would be really interested in this.
Yeah.
You're right that Kinnan probably will not switch to this instead, but
there's some... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go for it.
There are some decks that run Mirror Maid and copy enchantment right now, and, like, this, I think, has a little bit more flexibility to that, too. And as a different creature type than enchantment... What? Different card type than enchantment.
Yes.
I'm still right.
Yep.
I think that might, like, be better for certain decks than others. Like, this is better in Ral, Monsoon Mage, than it would be than, like, Mirror Maid or something like that.
Yes, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, you're actually right. That's a big deal. Rao probably would like something like this, right?
Yeah.
Maybe? I mean,
if Vivi only said instant and sorcery, like, I would be way happier about this then, too. But, it's just something to consider.
Vivi says non-creature?
Vivi's non-creature, yeah.
So, a clever impersonator doesn't trigger Vivi, but this does. Do you play
that's true,
Vivi?
Yeah. Is yeah, it, so, like, this Vivi could card? Also be... I mean, I'm not on Mirror Maid right now.
Okay.
So I feel like I would probably want Mirror Maid first, since it's still triggered. Vivi.
The flashback Vivi makes a ton of mana. Is that relevant?
Oh, maybe that's so true. No, that's a good point.
I feel like you can, like, not easily, but you have something to do. You have the extra mana.
I can copy my own curiosity at flash speed so that if someone tries to do something against my curiosity, I can get another curiosity.
That's pretty good. That's something. Okay.
I'm making it work. I'll make it
work. I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think this is also one of those flashback spells that in decks that are trying to mill over huge chunks of their library, the mere fact of it existing in your deck is going to enable some lines.
Yeah.
So I wonder if I should play it
in Terra. We already have a clone that we can pseudo flashback from the graveyard, though. It has turns into a zombie and it's like 5 mana from the graveyard.
You're at 5 color. You have everything. What are you worried about?
Yeah, but I'm wondering if it's something in Terra. Like, realistically, I like the copy enchantments and stuff in Terra because they're enchantments that Terra can sometimes get. But this can be flashback, but for 6 mana is like kind of insane in that deck, I feel.
That is a lot. Yeah, I feel that. Would you play this next card in Sisse, Dylan? This is Search for Dagger. This is one in a white for an enchantment that says whenever your commander enters or attacks, look at the top six cards of your library. You can reveal a legendary creature from among them and put it into your hand, and then put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
I want to. I want to like this card. I'm having a hard time figuring out how loud I should be in this microphone. Do I sound insane? Is this normal? You guys can hear me? See, that you made me feel like this. I do sound a little insane. I think that this card is almost good, but I don't think I'm going to play it in CDH in Sisay, specifically because I think what Sisay needs is legendary permanents that have pips that work towards Sisay. Like, if I'm going to commit something to the board, I need it to be something that's going to help Sisay or make mana. And although this does get me, like, advantage, and I do play a lot of Legends, and I could find some stuff off of this, it's not really the way I'd like to be doing it. I'd like to be getting advantage off of something that's already providing me two colors for Sisay, because, like, that's all I need. This would feel like almost a wasted space, because the thing that I get goes to my hand, and with Sisay, I need to commit to the board a lot. So I'm not super excited about this one. I could be wrong. The Sisay pilots try anything, and I have no idea. But this isn't one that's, like, jumping out at me for Sisay. Yeah, I think it'd be great in casual Sisay decks or any of the, like, what's the one that gives, like, all legends, like, Cascade, and it gives Joda. This is, like, a great Joda card maybe or something. But for CDH Sisay, I don't think so.
Yeah, Joda wants to attack, too, and I don't feel like Sisay wants to attack as much, so I get that. Yeah.
I was hoping this would be something in Timna Dargo because so many of the Dargo loops involve recasting him over and over. Oh. But I don't think there's actually any legendary creatures that if you cast Dargo 100 times, you're going to, like, put something together that can then win you the game, which is really what you would need to have. But that was a fun idea for a minute there. I was like, wait a minute, you get Bergy, and then, like, you go nuts, and it doesn't work.
But yeah, I feel like if you're already casting Dargo infinitely, you have something else. But
yeah.
Well, I mean, you're right. Like, if you don't have an outlet, like, it's nice that, like, you can at least try to find one a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I got one more card to talk about before we wrap up with the rest of the questions in there. This is VV's Persistence. This is one in a red for an instant that lets you create a 0/1 black wizard creature token with whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this token deals 1 damage to each opponent. Whenever your commander enters or attacks, you can pay 2 to return this card from your graveyard to your hand. So this felt like an Obnixilis card. Yeah. Like, if you could make Punishing Fire for Obnixilis specifically, yeah, I feel like you would make VV's Persistence.
Are there any Obnixilis players here today?
Nice! Do you like this card?
This could be something. It's definitely in the options. It's in the Obnixilis box, right? It's like in the category of things that you want for that deck. I think it's worth considering too, for sure.
Yeah.
What's in the non-Obnixilis box?
Let's look what's in the box.
Let's go get it. Just bring the whole box over.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
that sounds great. All right.
Just, are we just going to, like, dump them on ourselves and, like, speak
to the
duck?
Yeah, let's just dump them. Let's do a dumping situation.
No. Okay.
I have a bunch. I'm going to go first since I've been given this one.
Yeah, sounds good.
Do it.
Uh-oh, this one says CDH Hot Takes. We might not do this one. Underrated cards in the 99 fave new set coming out in 2026. Ty. Okay, this is not that hot. Okay, this is fine. Underrated cards in the 99. Underrated cards. I'm going to go Vexing Bauble. I don't know if that's underrated, but I have found Vexing Bauble to be very good at stopping Atali and also stopping my opponent's Force of Will when I would like to win the game. So I think that's something.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I think Phyrexian Revoker maybe is still, like, really reasonable and, like, just could see play in a lot more decks than it does, especially in, like, you know, a somewhat Thrasios heavy meta. I'm not sure it's as good as it was a couple months ago, but I would see that in, you know, Winota, because I play against a Winota deck pretty often, and I'm always like, you know what? I think there are other decks that this could be in right now.
Yeah, but that makes sense. You got an underrated card for the 99?
Right now, I would say Lively Dirge is the card that I'm most excited to keep playing in the 99 right now that I think is a little underrated.
Yeah.
People have no idea what you're doing with it when you put it on the stack.
That's true. Yeah,
and
you
I
can
love
just
that.
Go get Grendabolish or put it right in play. That's fine. This one also was a two-parter and said fave new set coming in 2026, which I feel like is kind of relevant because we've been talking about the new sets.
Yeah.
Favorite one for me I'm excited about. I forgot all of them already. What are yours?
You've been blacked out this whole time.
Yeah. What are your favorite sets?
I'm going to say Lorwyn is
my favorite one too.
For next year.
Mine too.
Of course it is.
Look, I want to say Lorwyn because I missed the first Lorwyn. I wasn't playing at the time. I didn't come back until Born of the Gods. But the Hobbit is coming out. It's going to be the Hobbit.
Oh, the Hobbit. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah. I've got a really fast one. Do you want me to read this real quick? And we can answer it all together in unison. First Sliver food chain, better than Itali? One, two, three. No.
No. Nope. Itali is the best food chain deck. And realistically, like almost a tier one deck at this point. I truly think that might be the case.
I feel like it is. Yeah. I got sick of losing with Vivi yesterday. I pulled out Itali for one game and won immediately. I love that deck. Oh my God. What do you guys think about Blink and Flicker in Kefka? I run a little of both, but prefer the Flicker.
I think it's good. I think you want less.
Oh, rather than copies. That's what that says. Oh, sorry. Copies. Instead of copies. So like plain.
Copies are flexible. I like that sometimes copies can be other stuff.
Yeah. There's like Essence Flux.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of that card a second ago. That's why I blanked. But like that's what I'm thinking of, which like has a little bit of flexibility in that like you can use it on your Spellseeker again if that's something that comes up. I think I like clones a little better, too, just because they are a little bit more flexible. Although I'll admit they're a little bit more expensive for that flexibility.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would want more cards that are flexible and overall powerful. I don't want to find weak cards that my commander makes better. I want to find good cards that my commander makes better. And like Phantasmal Image is like already, in my opinion, a good card. So I want to lean that direction. Yeah. This one says apples are a way overrated fruit. So that's good.
No, they're not.
I think apples are great. I love apples.
Apples are awesome.
I could eat an apple every single day. Yeah.
I do love apples quite a bit. Yeah. We're all pro apple over here.
Pro apple.
So, you have an Android.
What? That's true.
That was so funny, Cameron. Oh my God.
This one, I'll do a real one. Any key Spider-Man commanders are CDH worthy in your opinions from Patrick? Just because we've been talking about Green Goblin. I actually think Green Goblin might be good. So I'm looking to play a little bit more of that one. I don't know. Is it better than Kefka or Rock'Sai? I'm not sure. I think it sits somewhere in between those speed-wise. It's a little bit slower than Kefka, but doesn't grind as well. Or a little bit faster than Kefka, I mean, and then a little bit slower than Rock'Sai, but it does fun graveyard stuff, which I like.
I think it remains to be seen, but I think Gwenum is genuinely on the same level as Crick. If Crick is good enough, then Gwenum is good enough.
I think so, too. Yeah, we saw Gwenum. If you watched our gameplay video from this morning, which you probably didn't because you were here, but if you did, you should watch it. You did.
But
we played with Spider-Man Commanders, and spoiler alert, Gwenum did a lot of game actions. A lot of game actions from Gwenum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you, Tyler?
I've got one. So this is, what is one card that you would throw into any CDH deck if it can be run? So maybe like our top go-to staple.
You answer first because I don't know.
Yeah, say it again. What is it?
What is one card that you would throw into any CDH deck if it is legal to run in that deck? Soul Ring, Mox Diamond, all of those. If I'm going to go to one that is a little further off the path, like I always put Gilded Drake in. I think it is so much better than people give it credit for.
You like it more than Volatile Storm Drake still?
It's really close, I think a little bit, yeah.
The fact that Volatile Storm Drake can sometimes just be like Terminate is really good, I think.
That is really good.
It's just like destroy target creature.
It can be really good.
That is really sweet, yeah. How do you figure out what commander to pick for CEDH as someone who has not played CEDH?
Card advantage, mana advantage, combo potential. These are the main things we're looking for. Was that
for what we're looking for?
Doing some amount of those things really well, I think, is what I want.
I think so too. If you need a little bit of like guidance, as to like, I know that, but like, I don't know what commander specifically I want to find. My biggest recommendation would be content. Check out other gameplay shows so that you can see how all of these decks play, and I think that will give you a good idea as to how to figure out like which one of these seems the most fun for you, might fit your play style from other formats that you played, whether it was like 60 card or casual EDH. I think that's a good way to go about finding.
And look for things that can be active as soon as possible, I think. Look for stuff that you're going to start doing on turn one or two and three, and that's where you want to be the most prevalent to, that advantage.
I think one other thing, too, is if you're jumping into CEDH, even if you are normally a control player in other contexts, do not try and start with a control deck like Glarb. I think you have to know a lot about the format and the meta and like what to expect out of other decks to be able to do control effectively, and it's just a really difficult place to start. I think it puts you on the back foot.
How are you doing there, Dylan?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, some of the questions are just similar to ones that we've already answered, so I'm just chucking them.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Thank you for those questions, of course, but that's the reason. Do you have another one?
Patrick says, how are we feeling?
Feeling pretty good. I feel like I just see that now the time says 2 minutes and 30 seconds, so I'm feeling I know when the end is. End is in sight. But other than that, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, me too. I've really been a fan of this chair that I've been sitting in for the past hour and a half.
Yeah,
like I haven't felt like I've had any back issues in this chair. I felt like Even though I've
had
like
back
slouched.
Issues all weekend, I cannot bend over right now. Something
I'm glad
pulled.
That you're sitting in this chair. Yeah, chair it looks like it's doing you wonders.
How are you feeling?
They're generally like this all the time. I'm at MagicCon. This is like my favorite place to be. I'm feeling great. Are you kidding me? This is awesome.
Yeah, this gets good. How are you guys feeling? How's everyone else feeling? Good.
I meant how are you feeling about the chair, Tyler?
You know, yeah, come on, Tyler. Chair.
How do you feel about the chair?
I refuse it. No, I want to take it. I like the chair.
There's nothing that they can do about it. I'm just going to take one on the plane.
How often should large meta shifts happen in a healthy meta game, if any?
Oh, naturally. I don't want to designate a specific time frame that it needs to change because I think that's how we make it not great. I think naturally it will adjust to itself. Like a living, breathing organism.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
that was gross. That was a gross comparison.
I get what you're saying. Though. Yeah, no.
I think the other thing that's worth saying there is that, like, a lot of times when there are very abrupt and frequent meta shifts, it's because there is a lot of banning or a lot of control that has to happen around a format. And for how large the card pool is in Commander and CDH in particular, that really doesn't have to happen very often, and it really self-regulates fairly well. So I think the fact that we don't have a ton of bannings and a bunch of like abrupt shifts is like a really great sign of the health of the format.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you have any good questions over there?
Yeah, how do you feel about Magda in the current meta? Do you feel like it's still a tier one strategy with Bowmaster out there?
Tier one's hard to say, right? I never know what's tier one, but I think it's close. I do think it's the best at what it does. It's the best mono red deck for sure. It's probably the best artifact deck for sure.
I would say the best mono color deck for sure.
Yeah, I think it does a lot of things really well. I don't know. In the right hands, in the right pilot, absolutely is a tier one deck. And if you're just still learning the deck, it's a tricky deck to learn because you have to know your whole list in your mind. You have to know what to search for and when to search. But I still think Magda's really good.
Yeah, I think it's still top tier.
It's difficult to interact with. Yeah, so fast.
It's fallen out a little bit as Turbo becomes more prevalent, but Magda has ways to match Turbo just by being Turbo herself too.
Yeah.
So it'll adjust very well to no matter where the meta is. Right. So I think Magda's always a solid tier 1.5.
And you don't realize that like it can still win on turn 3. It's still fast.
It still can.
Just because
like,
it's a slower deck, it can still win really fast.
That's true.
I have a good one that I think might work as a good last question.
Cool.
If you could make any non-legendary creature your commander, who would you build and why?
Sun Titan, because it's my favorite card.
Oh my gosh. It's from Original Lorwyn. What's the one that lets you steal all your opponent's lands if you tap 7 Druids, I think it is?
Oh, someone know this?
Oh. Yes, Guiltleaf Archdruid. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I just enjoy cruelty and violence, and I would do that to my opponents all day long. Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I should have prepared a better non-legendary creature. I'm going to pick Bloodbraid Elf. I would like to have Bloodbraid Elf.
Oh, I changed my answer.
Food chain outlet, right? You can cast Bloodbraid and cascade through your whole deck. It's like a first gen food sliver, but
you know,
it's,
in Pauper Commander, you can play, right? Because that's how that works, something. Even though now there's legendaries at Common.
Sweet. I think that's it. Should we end the podcast?
No, let's do another one, honestly. We've got to cancel the next one. I'm sorry.
Yeah. There's tons of more stuff happening at the Mana Stage. If you'd like to say hi to us, we'll be right out there after this. Please feel free to say hello.
I think Commander at Home is going to be here
after
this.
Commander at Home.
Who's
staying for Commander at Home?
Woo!
Yes.
Yeah,
thank you, everyone, for coming out today. Yeah. It was great to see you all.
You have your phone, right?
Thank you so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so at our Patreon, like our $100 patrons, FinksMTG, Wandering Around, and Mike H., Tom Bieber, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Nathan Cohen, Mr. Jerby, Oki Toad, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Johnny Denver Omelette, Rocky Hall, Pat Fire, Spangler, Larceny Roar, Zorboy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Zach Hartley, Big Legs Banjo, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, The Works 472, Gare Bear Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Demon of Grosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Doot Loot, Kawaja A. Hamid, Scott LaHawk, and Baby G-Bus. If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do so at PlayToWinMTG.com. And thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off. And you can follow us on the internet for more content. Thanks again for watching. We'll see you next time. XO, Sarge MTG, Rick, Shardicus, Max McComber, Meta, Ben Finelli, Jason Brooks, Zafarius, Ash Wayne, Vietnam's 69, Sarcastic, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Dalton Poteet, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson. Thanks, everyone.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century.
Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.